Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Welcome to the fifth show of Talking Eds Season 2, presented by students of International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change Cohort 2. I am Sabrina from Bangladesh, your host for the day. So listeners, today on this show we will be discussing about mass media and adult education. Today we have with us Yuna from South Korea and Yumi from China.
Hello everyone, this is Yumi from China.
Hi listeners, this is Yuna from South Korea.
Today we will be discussing about the current situation of mass media and how information, economics and language has influence on creating public opinion. We will be talking about two cases from China and South Korea regarding how media influence people. We live in a global world where everyone is interconnected. Investment in the education of adults, which will eventually lead to skill development, information and communication technologies, and capital formation of the grassroots level through the mass media cannot be understated. In the 20th century and onwards, mass media has got immense popularity in the world, no matter whether it is the electronic media, print media, or the social media. People have made themselves highly active on such portals and at the same time are highly influenced by it. There is a term which is vastly used, and that is educational media. Yumi, would you like to describe us what educational media is?
Sure. Media is the channel through which messages, information, ideas, and knowledge are conveyed or disseminated. They are the tools or instruments through which stimulus can be passed out or obtained. Most importantly, when media are used for educational purposes, they are regarded as educational media. Nowadays, most influential or followed media is social media. Apart from social websites such as Facebook or Twitter, there are also blogs, forums, Wikipedias, etc. Of course, we cannot forget traditional media like television, radios, or even print media as well.
So, how do you think media help us to learn? Is it only about providing information?
No, Yuna, I don't think it is only providing information. Mass media plays a significant role in adult education as it only delivers information but also influence our decision and opinion regarding social, political and personal issues. Bangladesh, being a developing country, is still facing challenges regarding adult education, but I have experienced many programs broadcasted by radio and television which aims to educate adults. A recent example is teaching English through radio broadcasted by BBC Janala, which is known as BBC Window. Also, almost 15 years ago, many literacy and post-literacy programs regarding health, environment, human rights used to be broadcasted through radio and television. These programs were produced by Open University of Bangladesh, so they used radio and television as a platform. Those programs had a massive effect on people's awareness about children's vaccination, how to prevent many water-contaminated diseases, many issues regarding human rights, for example, right to cast your vote, right to express opinion, women's rights, etc.
Yeah, well, that's a very good example. What about social media? How can we learn from there?
I think YouTube can be a very good example for that. People can learn what they want to learn, and they can also put comments underneath the videos to express their opinions.
Well, that is a very interesting point. Now we will be moving on to the discussing critical perspective of media. Should we always believe media? Now, Yumi, what do you have to say about it?
Apparently, as society continues to be influenced by advanced technology, social media has been massively used in our daily lives now, and more people intend to use popular online media tools to reach information that is relevant to our needs, which is more convenient, of course. But personally, sometimes when I need certain information, I would listen to podcasts or turn to Wikipedia instead of going to the library reading books, which is way more time consuming. However, if I was trying to reach information about serious issues, I normally would not depend on those social medias, as I have doubts in my mind about their reliability. For example, the content in wikis are largely created collaboratively, which means anyone can edit or contribute to the information. In such cases, I have to treat those information in social media more critically.
Yes, and more importantly, media does not only serve as a platform. The pure information provided in media is only a tip of the iceberg. Media itself has power and its own interest as well. It is worth thinking about whom media is working for. Is it the masses or the power hidden behind media?
It is a very good point that media has its own power and is likely to be used for the sake of its own interest. When we're talking about the interests of media, the first one coming to my mind is economic factor. A typical example can be in the commercials in the front page of newspaper or social websites. Those advertisement companies can always use money to secure their spots in the media platforms. In my country, China, for example, most people would use a type of social media named Weibo, which is pretty much like Twitter. In the homepage of this website, there is a top searching list telling people the most popular or most important topics in each day. However, it is actually a well-known secret that the list is not relying on the literate searching rate of each word. Celebrities and companies can just buy a spot in the list. Since so many people use this social media in China, it creates a false impression that everybody around us concerns about news appeared in this list.
This list probably will attract more people's attention and more search than usual. How many people in China would use Weibo, Yumi?
By the end of 2017, the active user of Weibo are almost 400 million.
Wow, that is a lot.
Yeah, definitely. Imagine the information that is exposed to such a huge amount of people are easily influenced by financial or political pressure. I have read a piece of news a few days ago, which is about a company named Cambridge Analytica. Basically, this company has stole personal information of a quarter of Facebook users in the US, which is around 50 million people, I guess. And based on those information, they send specific targeted political commercials to users in order to manipulate the voting in president election and other political events.
Yes, I think I've heard about it. Whenever global events happen, most other countries translate and release the news. What we should be careful about is how we are following the real information. Let us talk how different language of the media affects other countries' perception. How do foreign newspapers or media affect South Korea, Yuna?
Okay, well, I would like to illustrate what happens around the presidential election in the United States. So most of the Korean well-educated professional population, especially those who studied in the U.S., looked at Trump with contempt or dislike. So no one supported Trump, at least the people around me. There was a saying, shy Trump, which means people who support Trump, but didn't talk about it, call themselves a shy Trump.
Oh, really? Why do you think Koreans resented Trump at the time?
I think it was largely the responsibility of the media who formed anti-Trump public opinion in Korea. In other words, the result of anti-Trump feelings were because that's the way the Korean media covered him. At the time, Trump was blamed for racism, women hatred, and all the discrimination. Also, most Korean media rushed to translate and publish CNN, New York Times, or Washington Post without any fact check. Sometimes there was a political bias in news for Trump with supporting Hillary Moore. I remember most Koreans were scared and afraid of what if Trump became president of the United States, and it became true.
Oh, that is a very good point, that following some newspapers and their perception can change, you know, have a massive influence on others. So U.S. election winner has a massive shock for South Koreans?
Oh, yes, it was. It was a very absurd moment. We thought Americans were so foolish to vote for him. The Korean news media startup, Publi, which I worked at before, held an open discussion with panels on how we have to be conscious of considering both sides without preconception. It was a very great opportunity to discuss rather than supporting or following a general trend, but to be more critical to look at this election as a Korean. So which one gives more long-term interest to South Korea and its people? Isn't there any prejudice with the reckless media covering between the mainstream candidate Hillary and non-mainstream, also quite fringe member Trump? How could we create constructive social discussion?
Sure. The reason to read newspaper is to see the world, and most people cannot help in believing it. Once there is formed public opinion, it is hard to change it.
Yes, exactly. That's why translators should be more responsible for what they deliver through the process of fact-checking. We're sitting in the middle of such a turbulent time for media right now. Part of the problem is that we try to focus on how population move.
Back to Talking Ed Season 2, presented by IMAS Cohort 2. Today we are talking about media's influence in adult education with Yuna and Yumi. Before the break, we were discussing how media can influence a large number of population very easily. Yuna was telling us a very important point of checking the facts before forming the opinion, and also about being careful of using language. Population easily move on with the trend and create popular opinion. Analyzing a million comments on New York Times when the news recommended by the readers and the comments selected as super commenters makes highly active participation in the online comment section. This is the result of the survey from the University of Texas Engaging News Project, researching participation in journalism of digital readers. These days, managing comments by Korean newspaper is also controversial. How's it going, Yuna?
Yes, online comment sections provide a space for the public to interact with the news, to express their opinions, and to learn about others' views. So Korea is a very interesting case. In Korea, the portal site is called Naver, has all the news channels.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Google also has news, but the way to deliver news is quite different from Naver.
Right.
For example, when you access to Google Home, it shows the search box only. So if you want to search a certain cases of news, you have to enter a query. However, in the case of Naver, you can see the search box, and below there are news sections which allow you to see the four or five major news headlines. If you have your account of Naver, you can assign the newspaper companies on the front page.
Mm-hmm. So can readers write down their comments there?
Yes. Since 2004, Naver introduced the comment function below news. Since then, it has played a significant role in forming public opinion. There is even a saying of comment journalism. Naver constantly changes their comment policy because of its growing influence, but still there's a problem. Comment war happens all the time between conservatives and liberals. I've recently read a news article that comments can form the public opinion as if the news is important by using the ranking news system within 2 hours.
How is that possible? With comments forming fake public opinion within only 2 hours?
Yes, exactly. So let's say you can access the foreign site offering a virtual phone number and make 5 phone numbers. And when you go to the Korean web portal site, those numbers are quickly passed to create IDs. And you comment on the news which has no comments of others with these 5 IDs. However, this news could rank on 28th as the top comments news within 2 hours. As more exposed, people started to click like.
Mm-hmm. Even if this portal site is not officially media, it influences huge.
Yes, exactly. This fake public opinion impacts the negative influence of information. Well, however, recently Naver released a new analyzing comment site, which is called worldmeter.net. The developer said he developed to find out whether these comments are coming from bona fide individuals or people who are trying to manipulate public opinions. Through this site, from November to March, the people who wrote more than 1,000 comments was 1,619.
Wow.
Yes, and this number was actually 50 times higher than average people writing only 5 or 6 comments a month.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And analyzing these eager commenters, they tended to show strong political ideology and repeat the same comments. Also, they focused on these sensitive issues such as policy, diplomacy, and South and North Korean issues.
That's a very good site to analyze and dissect comments. If these strategic commenters are found, are they going to be expelled from the portal site or any other punishment?
Well, unfortunately not. Naver currently does not impose these sanctions on comments. I think we can learn a lesson from New York Times case. So, New York Times picks are a selection of comments that represent a range of views and are judged the most interesting and thoughtful. In some cases, NIT picks may be selected to highlight comments from a particular region or readers with first-hand knowledge of an issue.
Yeah, I agree that we have to take deep dives into comments section for a data-centered look at what their future should be. It is very informative perspective regarding media. Thank you, Yuna. Now, Yuna is going to talk to Professor Dr. Alex Gregg, who has kindly agreed to talk to us regarding critical perspective of media.
To offer a more critical perspective about media, we're going to talk about the challenges that media faces nowadays. Today, we have Dr. Alex Gregg here with us. He's from Faculty of Media and Knowledge Sciences in University of Malta. Here is a conversation with Dr. Gregg. Hello, Dr. Gregg.
Hi, Nelly.
So, tell us about your research area first.
Okay, my research area, I'm a late researcher, so I'm somebody who came into academia very late in life, having had a whole career of working for multinationals, and essentially I'm a strategist who's dived into academia and in his late 40s. My interest primarily is the disruptive potential of new media. And by new media, I mean anything which primarily focuses on social media, I guess, these days. most media is social. So I guess my area nowadays is critical approaches to new media. Mm-hmm. I've gone from setting up courses at the University of Malta, which used to look at social media marketing and social media strategy. And these days, I teach anything from Internet Studies 101 to digital literacies and social networking for people who are creatives, for instance. So I guess my focus now is on making mindful use of the technologies we use on an everyday basis. That's what I do.
So rather than teaching these tools, like how to use
Absolutely. I mean, I think if you want to know how to use the tools, I mean, just go online and learn how to use the tools.
Exactly.
Understanding how the tools are using you, or how you can really use the tools, that's the real big elephant in the room that nobody's addressing. In many countries, we have a problem in the classroom, we have a problem in society, we have a problem in the boardroom, we have a problem in, I mean, just look at Trump. Remember, we're now living in an age where the President of the United States said that he could not have become president without Twitter, which tells you something about these technologies, which were seen to be frivolous, even a waste of time, and the realities that we now face.
Yes, right. So, like, is it just a platform, or does it provide information with a bias as well? So how do we understand this, the role of media?
It depends on which way you're going to attack this. I totally subscribe, from the McLuhan perspective of media is the message, but I'm more convinced that Castells got something right when he started talking about the network society, primarily in terms of the reflexive relationship between media and society.
Yes.
And on the basis that media is changing all the time, and society is changing all the time.
Right.
So let's assume that one is pushing into the other to change, and the other is pushing the other one to change. It's in a very incestuous, reflexive relationship. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I come from the perspective that both of these things are changing and reflecting on each other. So if you have to look at, I don't know, in terms of media changing, I mean, what do we mean by media changing? It could be the infrastructure is changing, you have new devices,
right,
new services, new platforms.
Uh-huh.
If you start exploring platforms, that gets you now into the age of big data and algorithms and cloud computing and AI, or it gets you into more interesting things from my perspective, things not just social media, but platform capitalism.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it gets you into things like the new media industry that we have right now, how that's changing. And if you then spin it around and you look at, you know, society, and I think there is value in the network society construct. Then you start looking at things like the economy, how we organize ourselves, the society, how culture is changing because of new media, or despite new media.
That's why you call this platform capitalism.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think we're pretty much in that era now.
Uh-huh,
I mean,
right.
Remember that, you know, a lot of us, let's call ourselves old hippies, okay? All of us who saw the internet as a means of personal empowerment, this has now been hegemonized into essentially the big four on the platforms, okay? The Facebooks, the Googles, the, you know, the Apples and the Amazons. I mean, from my perspective, it's, you know, the current criticism towards Facebook is not accidental. This has been a long time coming, you know. So that's, you know, that's my long answer to your question is, you know, if you subscribe to the notion that media is changing and society is changing and all of these things are byproducts of that reflexive relationship, you can then explore anything from, you know, platforms to e-commerce to to power to identity, which is the most important I guess construct in terms of what's changing these days. You know, I mean, if you subscribe to, of course, technology of the self and operationalize that, there's you can do a lot of stargazing these days. But where I come from, I repeat, my interest is on the basis that technology is not going to go away, and technology is changing all the time.
Right.
On the basis that we navigate our life through screens, okay? We spend more time looking at screens than looking at each other.
Right.
Now, from the day we're born, I mean, look at millennials, or look at you guys, okay, my son. I think that we have a crisis in terms of how to make mindful use of these technologies. So that's where I am. That's my world. Media is not neutral. Okay, that's all I can say.
No neutral. So the media itself has a power and its interest as well. So who do you think the media is serving for?
All right. So
what's the power behind it?
Okay, come on. When you talk about media, I mean, if you talk about, listen, about old media, I mean, in the old days, owning a printing press was the ultimate means of having power, which is why, you know, in this country, a printing press, the times and more than once, got burned down in the 1970s because it was deemed to be a symbol of power.
Yeah.
I doubt if a printing press would get burned down now, probably somebody's phone would, you know, get blown up for all I know.
Yeah.
Or a blogger could get blown up, but it gets closer to home over here. So there is power in the medium, there is power in how we use the medium is using us. We talked about platform capitalism and the Gang of Four. I mean, you know, if you look at the data we decide to leave on platforms like Facebook on the basis that it's free. I mean, there's no free lunch in any of this.
Right.
Okay. So what I do is I help people understand that, yeah, in a way, there's no free lunch. If you're using platforms, that data is no longer yours. And every single thing, you know, the social graph is what it is. You're being, whatever is served to you on your timeline, or whatever is rendered on your search results, nothing is accidental. There are algorithms working in the background, all based on the profiling which happens on the data that we have chosen to give these platforms in return for what we get. And what we get is quite a lot for some people.
Yeah, you know, some people, that.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at, you know, look at, you know, I mean, 2 o'clock in the morning and see all the green buttons which are lit up and people still awake doing something on Facebook for all I know, or, you know, there's a hell of a lot of lonely people out there, and we can put these things to good social use or even good political use.
Learning social media not as a tool but a practice is a first step to practice for adult education. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today, Dr. Greg.
Thank you, Yuna and Yumi, for sharing and discussing your personal experience and thoughts regarding the current situation of media in adult education. I would also like to thank Professor Dr. Alex Greg for honoring us by sharing his thoughts and giving us valuable insights. Today we discuss about mass media and how it influences public opinion, critical discussion of media's usefulness and how best we can handle information gained through media and power of media in our life. That's all for today, dear listeners. With this, we have reached the end of our show, and Yuna, Yumi and me, Sabrina, saying our goodbye for the day. And grazie Hafna for listening to us. Thank you.